This is DiPietro, Canty, and Rothenberg.
Rick has up and moved the family to Pennsylvania Dutch country. Still no internet where he lives out on the island, so we've got a little bit of a problem on that front. So unfortunately, Rick not with us today to bask, well, not bask, actually really have to relive the Islander loss yesterday. I was going to say bask in the glory, but I mean, they're still up 2-1 in the series, but I mean, that was a bad one. So we'll see what happens tomorrow at noon. Chris, how are you?
I'm doing good. And you know, Ricky's got to be somewhat in a good mood. I mean, the Mets did play well last night. Rick Porcello bounced back from the awful first two starts that he had in the Mets uniform. So, I mean, there was some positives for Rick Sports Day yesterday.
No, there were. Yeah. I'm sure the Islander one stuck out a little bit, but who
the
were
Islanders
those guys?
The Islanders are still in control of that series, though. You know what I mean? Like, there were some uncharacteristic mistakes, and you saw that the Panthers took advantage of power play opportunities. Like, that wasn't a Barry Trotz, New York Islanders typical performance. So I look at that as an outlier, as an aberration. And let's face it, the Panthers were desperate. They were facing an elimination game, so you knew that you were going to get their best shot. But we'll see what happens on Friday.
Well, we will get into this a little bit later as well. And you mentioned the Mets. I mean, let's start with the baseball across the board. First of all, who were those guys wearing Met uniforms last night deciding to field all of a sudden? I mean, they made every single play. And I'm not talking about like one or two, Chris. They're making 10 plays across the board. And guys like Jacob DeGrom have to be looking at that like, who the hell are these people?
No, I mean, listen, they were much improved from what we had saw the night before. And, you know, you got to give credit where credit is due, man. I thought that Rick Porcello went out there and set the tone. He had the cutter, the slider, and the changeup all working. Luis Rojas talked a little bit about it after the game. He was mixing his pitches, and he kept the Nats lineup off balance. And then he got some nice defensive plays to support him. That one play by Jimenez at the end of the fourth on that Thames grounder, like that was a pretty good play. Like, I mean, to be able to dive, to field the ground ball, and then backhand it, make a strong throw to first, like that was impressive. Like, to see a young guy make that kind of play. But those are the types of plays that you have to make to support your starting pitching, especially the guys not named Jacob DeGrom, right? Because you know that they don't have his natural talent, and they're not going to be able to get away with the mistakes that they make, and you're going to have your defense pick you up at some point throughout the course of the season. So it was nice to see those moments mixed into the game yesterday. And quite frankly, Rick Porcello needed that. He needed a bounce-back performance. He needed something to build his confidence, because he was off to a terrible start with the Mets, right? He was off to an awful start. And so I thought that was a good team win, solid all the way around, and the Mets should feel pretty good about it.
Yeah, they should. And last thing I want to do is take anything away from it. What I will do is take something away from it, though. And the problem with it for me is somebody capable of really stepping up and filling this void that they have in the rotation at the moment? Is Rick Porcello capable of really being a solid number two starter for where they are right now? I don't know the answer to that. In the first couple of games, we obviously saw it wasn't good, and we saw what he did do yesterday. But the biggest part of that for Porcello is going to be getting that kind of support behind him, Chris. I mean, he's never going to be somebody who's going to just overpower you, especially at this point in his career. Not that it was ever a big part of his repertoire. Mm-hmm. But I look at it from this standpoint. If you're going to have somebody who's still there right now, not named DeGrom, step up and be able to be that second pitcher, it's going to be because they get a lot of help from people around him. A night like last night has to be something that we see a lot more often. It can't be the aberration.
Yeah, you want to see it more often. Now, the Mets had a couple of things working in their favor. They had Guillorme playing second in for Cano, and you know he's a much better defender based on where Cano is at in his career. And, you know, I just think that when you looked at it, you saw that the defense collectively played a lot better than we're accustomed to them playing. And I like the fact that Porcello has a lot of experience. He earned his 150th career win. So there's something to be said about a guy that has a lot of experience going out there and being able to to work his way through a lineup like the Nats and limit, you know, the damage that that they can do. But here's the thing. I think if you're depending on Porcello to be a frontline starter, at some point that's going to catch up with you. I don't think that the Mets can expect that from him to be a top guy in the rotation. Like, you're looking at Porcello as a middle to back end of the rotation type of pitcher, and to ask him to do anything but that is setting yourself up for failure. Like, you need Stroman to come back. You need Mats to be better than he was the last time out. Like, those are the guys that have to really step up. I just don't see that coming from Porcello consistently, what we saw last night.
No, I don't, and I don't expect it either. But I'm stuck on that word hope, which I think that so many Met fans are too often having to be stuck with. You know, look, they've had some bad luck this year with the injuries. There's no getting around that. Mm-hmm. But is it really too much to ask in a 60-game season for somebody to go above and beyond what they are, especially when you're that kind of a guy? When you are Porcello and you've won a Cy Young in your career, and yeah, it was 4 or 5 years ago, but you know, even last year, they scored runs for him, but he still found ways to, you know, to win games when he was out there. So that might be, even though he got hit hard and he had the ERA that he did, they were still winning around him. Mm-hmm. Can I get Porcello to a point this season in a short year where I can just rely on him to give me a chance every time? I don't need him to be great. Can I get 6 innings and 2 runs, 3 runs? Can I get the definition of the quality start from Porcello for the majority of the time this season, especially when you only have, what, 12 starts in the year for starting pitchers?
Yeah, it's not a lot of appearances. So could you get that from him consistently? I think that's a lot to ask for Rick Porcello to go out at this stage in his career and give you a quality start every time out. Now, if you're saying five innings of three run ball, I could see that. Give me 5 innings of 3-run ball. Let me turn it over to my bullpen. The only problem is, you know, on the days where you don't have Seth Lugo capable of going multiple innings for you, do you trust enough guys in the bullpen to get you from when Porcello comes out of the game to your high leverage guys in Dellin Betances and Justin Wilson? Do you have enough?
Yeah.
I don't know. That's the question mark. That's going to continue to be the question mark for this Mets team, because the bullpen, even though we thought it was fixed, clearly is not. Now, last night, Porcello gives you 7 innings, and then you turn it over to Seth Lugo, and he closes the door, retires all 6 batters he faces. So you feel good about that. But this is one of those, man, I don't know. I don't know if there are any answers for the Mets outside of Mats being better and Stroman getting back healthy.
Okay. Let me put it another way. All I'm looking for here is a guy like that and somebody else. And you can tell me from the team atmosphere, what's always the mantra in football? It's next man up, right? Mm-hmm. The next guy has to step in and do the job. And if you lose a superstar, like the Jets, you know, Jamal Adams is gone. You're not going to have C.J. Mosley. Are they expecting guys to come in and play at that level? No. But they're expecting guys to come in and play at a level that is not going to kill them. And all I'm asking at this point is, there somebody else in this team or on this team that is capable of elevating for a period of time to get the Mets to the postseason? Because that, to me, is what is going to be required for that to happen. It can't be Alonso in a sophomore year slump. It can't be J.D. Davis not being a more consistent hitter. You have to get an unexpected contribution from somewhere. Maybe it's Jimenez. You know, they certainly like what they've seen so far. Maybe playing,
I don't know why you wouldn't like what you've seen so far.
Yeah. I mean, defensively, listen, Rosario's a good player. Don't get me wrong.
Yeah.
We haven't seen that kind of shortstop in a while for the Mets, defensively. So all I'm asking for, in a season where you have expanded playoffs, in a season that is only 60 games, for a couple of other guys to really just play above their heads for a little while. Is that too much to ask for?
No, I don't think it's too much to ask for. And listen, I think the Mets are going to go as far as their lineup can carry them. Are there guys in their lineup that can step up? There absolutely are. I mean, Pete Alonso has got to be better. We know that. Jeff McNeil, when he gets healthy, is going to contribute. But a guy like Dom Smith, who you saw again last night with an RBI double, you know, those are the types of guys that you're going to have to ask for performances for. The only issue with Dom Smith is finding them at bats once everybody is healthy, because that's going to be a little bit tricky, because we know the Mets are insistent on Robbie Cano being in the lineup for some reason. I guess it's because they're paying him all that money. But, I mean, Dom Smith has got to find at-bats. You got to have J.D. Davis working. He's got to be in the lineup as well. Like, those guys are going to have to produce for you. So those are the guys that you're looking at. Like, those are the guys that I think have the talent to actually be consistent contributors to this team trying to make a postseason push. So I think those are the players that you're looking at, the young guys being able to have more playing time, being able to come into their own, being able to develop. And then I think you just ride that wave. Now, as far as the Mets go, they played 13 games in 13 days. They have an off day today, and then they've got a stretch of 7 straight home games, and I think they play the Marlins for 3 and the Nats for 4. So this is an opportunity for them to get right. We'll see what they do in the next 7 games. But, I mean, here's the thing. We already talked about how short this season is. You've played over 20% of the season already. So, I mean, there's not a whole lot of time in order to right the ship. So if they're going to get things turned around, it's got to start right now.
I would look at it and point to, in essence, the end of this month. You know, through the end of August, okay? They've got the Marlins, the Nats, both at home. Then they go to Philadelphia for 3. The Marlins for 4. Then they got the Yankees for 3, which is obviously problematic. And then the Marlins for 3 more. Mm-hmm. So over the next 2.5 to 3 weeks, you're playing the Marlins 10 times. And yeah, mm-hmm. they're out to a 5-1 start. I'm not buying that quite yet. but I mean, these are the games. This is the thing, Chris. This is why they have disappointed over the last several years. They don't win enough of the games that they're supposed to go win.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that's all I'm asking for. A couple of guys to play up a little bit higher than they normally do to elevate a team that is missing a couple of key components, and maybe, just maybe, be able to tie you over until you at least get one of them back as a starting pitcher.
Yeah, I mean, that's what you're looking for. I mean, I don't want to give this doom and gloom outlook for the Mets. They're 5-8. We recognize that if you're playing 500 ball, you're probably going to get into the postseason, right? Because you're talking about 8 teams from each league qualifying. The top 2 teams in every single division, and then you're talking about the next 2 best records in the league getting in the tournament. So I just feel like if the Mets, you know, get healthy and then they get, you know, Stroman back and you get McNeil back and you get Rosario back, it feels like they can position themselves to win enough games to be in it once we get to the second season. And then based on what they can throw at you with the guys that should be available as frontline pitchers in the postseason, you feel good about your chances. You do. So, I mean, I think that the biggest thing for the Mets is just make sure that you do everything that it takes to get in and don't fall apart before your season even has a chance to get started.
On the flip side, after what was easily the worst game that the Yankees have played all season in Game 1.
I don't know if it's the worst game the Yankees played or just the worst game that we've seen from Hap since he's been a Yankee.
Well, defensively, listen, Hap was terrible.
That was awful. He was awful.
He was absolutely awful. But they also made some mistakes. You know, Higashioka dropping the ball and then getting doubled off. And, you know, defensively, they weren't that good. Even LeMahieu made a mistake defensively when he threw one away when he was trying to throw it back in toward the infield. But that aside, you know, for them, let's start on the positive from the Yankees standpoint. That win with Aaron Nola, as good as he was last night, to grind it out and get to the 7th inning, you know, to me that's as good of a win as you can have. When you have a guy like that, when you're turning to your opener and you're asking the bullpen, because Hap was so bad that you had to get 4 innings out of your bullpen in the first game, and that obviously didn't go well, but now you're going to a bullpen game in the nightcap. To be able to go and get that win, there are certain wins in baseball, even though it's you know, such a long season, in this case, not as much. There are certain wins that carry a little more weight to them, and that is what that second game meant to me last night.
Yeah, I mean, Nola had double-digit strikeouts. The dude was dealing, man. And yeah. Aaron Boone talked about it. He said it wasn't going to be easy facing Zach Wheeler and Aaron Nola. I mean, when he's healthy, man, he's one of the better pitchers in baseball. And the fact that you found a way to be able to get to him. I mean, let's talk about that Luke Voit home run, though.
Oh.
I mean, Luke Voit clobbered that baseball. Like, I was watching that in real time, and my old man was saying, man, there was no doubt about that one off the bat. Mm. Like, no question about that. He got all of it. But, I mean, the fact that you were able to hang in there, you were able to get pitches on him and get him out and get to their bullpen when you were able to then start creating some scoring chances, I think that's what the Yankees lineup has to have in terms of their approach when they're going up against the better pitchers in baseball. It's not necessarily about being able to get at him and touch those guys up, but it's about being able to run up the pitch count and get those guys out of there, get to other teams' bullpens, and you know you had a decided advantage when you do that, and then you can create opportunities for scoring chances. That's exactly what they did. You had the Tauchman double, and then you had the RBI single from Gio Urshela, and that ends up being the game. So, I mean, you felt good about that, but in order to have those opportunities, you had to have your bullpen keep you in the game, and that's why you got to tip your cap to Loaisiga and Avalon and Chad Green and Britton. And Britton's been fantastic, by the way, too.
Yeah.
I mean, we talk about a lot of guys on this team, but I don't think we give him the credit that he deserves because he stood in as the closer when Chapman has been out, and he's been fantastic. So, I mean, you feel good about this team moving forward. There were some things yesterday that popped up in the first game that you didn't love, but everything about that first game was weird, right?
Yep.
I mean, you're talking about the Yankees playing their first 7-inning game of the season. Then you're also looking at it from the standpoint that they were the home team for the first game, so they were batting last.
It was bizarre to hear those Yankee bells.
Yeah,
in any place.
It was just strange. There was a lot of things off with that first game. So I just, you know, that's one of those, I don't want to be completely dismissive of it, but it's one of those things where when you're thrown off of your routine and you got to adjust on the fly the way that they've had. I mean, you're expecting a game like that every now and again from them. But I mean, the Yankees are 9-2. It's hard to nitpick with this team.
Yeah, I think it is too. And so many fans have looked at the Yankees and Mike Tauchman and have wanted to figure out ways to get him more at bats. There's a couple of interesting aspects of that, Chris. When you look at a guy like that, he has made himself entirely too valuable in the role that he is in to be that guy to get more at bats. You know, he's comfortable doing whatever it is that you need him to do. Mm-hmm. And when that's the case, it almost works against you sometimes. You know, you're trying to be everything to everybody and you're good at it. They're going to keep riding you to be everything to everybody.
Yeah, I mean, listen, I think that the Yankees have a lot of competition in terms of getting in the lineup. They create that competition, and that's a part of what makes this team so good. I mean, you talked about it yesterday. There's always somebody in this lineup that can hurt you 1-9, and you never know who it's going to be from game to game. And I think that's in part created by the competition for playing time, the competition for at-bats. And when you have that type of environment, it's going to bring out the best in guys. So when you get your opportunity, you know that you have to take advantage of it, and Mike Tauchman is no different. I mean, when you have Giancarlo Stanton and Aaron Hicks and Aaron Judge, you know, it's going to be a fight for playing time in the outfield, and, you know, Tauchman is getting in where he fits in. And I think he comes up aces in another big spot for the Yankees, and every time he does that, that's going to create more trust from the organization, from Aaron Boone, and from his teammates when he gets those opportunities. So I feel good about it. It's a glut of riches. I mean, we're talking about a day, you know, today the Yankees having the option and Duhar down. A bat like that. That's how much depth is on this team.
Well,
like, I just think this is one of those things that you realize, yeah, it's tough to find playing time for all of these guys, but when they step in, you have full confidence that they can get the job done because we saw that last year.
I think the easy answer on Andujar is he's not going to be that guy. I don't think Andujar is going to be the guy that you can get a couple of at-bats for here and there, and he's going to go in and be productive. I think he's a guy that has to go play every day. He has 14 at-bats on the season. And
yeah, it's hard to get in a rhythm like that.
Yeah, and he's, to me, is going to be what he was 2 years ago when he is in there every day playing a position. I don't think it necessarily matters what position he's playing for him mentally, but they optioned him down. They announced it this morning along with, I think it was Avalon and, or not Avalon, but Tyro Estrada and one other pitcher, Nick Nelson, after that was a rough one yesterday for Nick Nelson. But they sent him down after the game because they want to get him some more playing time, I'm assuming, and those at-bats are just not coming here anytime soon. And you have Tauchman who can do all of that, who can be that guy that you just give the spot start to in the middle of the week or pinch hit or whatever, and affords you that luxury as opposed to a guy like Andujar.
Well, yeah, I mean, I think that each player is different, and so you recognize, okay, this is something that a guy can do. This is a role that you can he can embrace versus not. And with Andujar, I mean, we've been talking about the Yankees moving him around to different positions just so they can have him in the lineup more consistently, but it hasn't worked out that way first couple of weeks of the season. So they got to do what they got to do. I just mentioned that from the standpoint of the competition that's on this roster. Like, it is always going to be competition, and you know, it puts the Yankees in a good spot from the standpoint that you have guys that are talented that have the potential to produce every single game. Like, it just doesn't matter. Even if you don't have your A lineup, you're capable of scoring a lot of runs. And that's the part about it that's reassuring as a Yankees fan, because you're going to have an opportunity to win a lot of games if your lineup can do damage. And clearly the Yankees lineup, no matter who's in there, can do damage.
Okay. Now we have the not-so-good part.
Oh, here we go.
Hap's atrocious. I mean, he's awful. And look, he could say after the game, and he wasn't using it as an excuse to his credit. I mean, he wasn't getting helped by Angel Hernandez, where balls that were strikes early in the game, or later in the game, were not strikes for Hap earlier in the game. I think that played a role in the six walks. But, Chris, who do you have faith in right now to be the third guy? Because you do have to have that third starter in the postseason, and I don't feel good about any of the options at the moment. Maybe I'll feel better about Montgomery after today or even moving forward, and I know it's absurd that we're talking about that in August, but it's really the big thing. It's really all that Yankee fans are thinking about right now, who's going to be that third starter, because beyond Tanaka, I have no idea who you would trust.
Well, I mean, I tell you what, Sunday's game against Tampa is going to tell us a lot, right? Because that's the next game that Paxton is scheduled to start. So we'll see how that works out. He said that he's working on some mechanics things. We'll see how that goes with their new with the Yankees' new pitching coach. But I mean, Paxton is going to be the guy. He's going to have the opportunity. That's why Brian Cashman traded for him. It'll be Paxton if he's healthy. So I mean, those are your three: Gerrit Cole, Masahiro Tanaka, and James Paxton. Now, as far as the regular season goes, you know, when Paxton is trying to right himself, and you know, when you're not whole with your starting rotation, I mean, listen, we don't know who those guys are going to be. I mean, you could look at a guy like Loaisiga. You saw what he did in an opener role yesterday. Is he capable of giving you five or six innings? Remains to be seen, but I'd like to give him a try. And let's face it, in the regular season, you can afford to just based on how your lineup is producing. But Jordan Montgomery has looked good in his return from Tommy John, so you feel good about what he's been doing, and you just have to kind of continue to go from there. I hope Jay Happ figures it out, but based on what we saw yesterday and what we've seen from him all year long, I don't have a lot of trust in that. So, you know, long story long, I don't think that you're looking at Happ or Montgomery or any of these other guys to give you postseason starts. But if you're in a position where you don't have the three guys that you were depending on coming into this year to make postseason starts, then I think you're talking about Brian Cashman being aggressive at the trade deadline at the end of this month.
Okay, but with Paxton, we have seen that the velocity has not gotten back up there. Nope. And it's fair to say that he is coming off this back surgery, and he's going to have to work back toward it. But look at what they've done. And part of this was because of what happened last week. But look at what they've done with his time off in between starts. He had 7 days between starts last week, again, partly because of the Phillies situation. And then this week, they manipulated it so he would have 6 days off between starts. And it makes me wonder, I know they want to ease him back in, but it does make me wonder when the velocity is where it is, Chris, that this could be a problem for the year if he is spending the next 2 months recovering from this back surgery and trying to pitch through it. This could be a real problem because as much as we know what he can do in the playoffs, if he's this guy with the pitches that he's throwing, he doesn't have a shot.
No, he doesn't have a shot. Like if his velocity doesn't come back, then you're going to have to start looking at other options. And I think Brian Cashman has enough ammunition to be able to go out and make a trade if he needs to in order to fortify the starting pitching and have somebody that you would trust in that top three to give you a postseason start. But yeah, if James Paxton doesn't get right, then I think that conversation starts to become a lot louder. Because, I mean, listen, we were talking about it. I mean, I don't think you look at Jordan Montgomery as a guy that you want to give a postseason start right now. Certainly, Jay Happ is not a guy that you want to give a postseason start right now. So you'd have to find other options probably outside of the organization. I just think that that's the reality. But it's not a bad position to be in just because you know you have the resources to be able to get a trade like that done.
800-919-3776, 800-919-ESPN. We're going to hit the calls right when we come back. Let's get them rolling shortly. Yankees, Mets, plenty on all of it. We got a lot of football to get to as well today. Who's playing corner for the Giants? I mean, Chris, you want to suit back up and maybe move to the outside?
No, I'm all set. But, I mean, the Giants are getting to that point where they might have to start talking to some guys that have walked away. Like, they might have to kick the tires on some of those veteran players that are out there in free agency because, man, outside of James Bradberry, I don't know who's playing corner for the Giants.
Yeah, I don't think the Giants know who's playing corner for the Giants outside of James Bradberry. And then if you're out on Long Island and you see a strange guy sitting in a car in a parking lot at a Target, he's just checking.
Just hope it's not Rick DiPietro trying to listen to the show.
Exactly, and checking his text messages. There's nothing nefarious going on, officer. Nothing at all.
Man, these Kellen Winslow impersonations.
Oh, no. Oh, no.
They've got to stop. It's got to stop.
Not good. All right. 800-919-3776. Carlin and Canty today. I'm in for Dave, and Rick is, somewhere on the island, like we said, without internet. So if he's aimlessly wandering near you, just pat him on the back and, well, don't do that now. You can't do that either. I was going to say give him a hug, but you can't do that. Can't do anything. Oh, poor Rick. Poor Rick. Maybe he'll call in later on. Carlin and for Dave, along with Canty, Rick's power, or rather internet, still out on Long Island. So, help a brother out. Welcome him into the house. He could bring his old broadcast unit. Get the man some, I wouldn't even say get him some chips. Like, what is Rick eating these days? Is he eating well? Is he eating healthy? Or is he, in the middle of
With the comfort food? I have no idea, Carlin. I have no idea. I don't know what his mental state is. But that is really what's going to determine what his diet is.
Give me the sauces.
Yeah.
Wow, that's aggressive. But yeah, here's the thing. You never know with Rick. I mean, based on what's going on with the Mets, he could be leaning toward eating his feelings. But I'm sure he feels great about what's happening with the Isles, so he could, be staying to his diet. I have no idea the state of Rick DiPietro right now. I have no clue.
It's troubling that you, as his co-host, have no clue about his situation at the moment.
Yeah, no
just
idea.
But it's not because it's not a knock on you. It's because I feel like Rick does hold back a lot emotionally. I feel like he's not an open book.
You think he holds back a lot emotionally? See,
I think
he wears his emotions on his sleeve.
See, in some cases, I think he does. I think when it's
with
real
sports
deep stuff.
Fandom, he absolutely does.
No, and absolutely. Why, and the sports fan to me absolutely wears it on his sleeve.
No question. And with the New York sports teams, it's a roller coaster, right? It's up and down. It's highs and lows. And with the Mets lately, it's been more lows than highs. But with the Isles, it's more highs than lows. So, I mean, it's just you just never know when it comes to Rico. You don't know.
Yeah.
He's kind of like one of those baseball players. He's kind of like Jeff McNeil right now. He's day to day. You just don't know what he is.
That's about right. I want him to be okay emotionally. That's all. And I think that he is, but I do wonder, like, how does he handle this kind of situation right now? No internet. As he put in a text this morning, living like the Amish right now. And yeah. Like, I can't imagine.
Everybody's dealing with it, though, man. I listened to Gordon Damer's show this morning, and he's doing it from his in-law's basement. So, I mean, you know, people are trying to find a way, man. It's a struggle out here. All I can say is it's 2020.
Well, let's find out then, shall we? Richard in Long Island is up on the phone. How are you?
What's going on? What's going on, fellas? First time, long time.
Oh, thanks for checking in. What can we do for you?
I just like to join the Sam Beal and Nate Solder and the rest of the NFL players that are opting out of 2020. I'm done with it.
What's going on? So how are you handling all of this right now? Because it is one groin shot after another at the moment. Agreed?
Yeah, my junk is a speed bag right now for 2020.
Yes.
That's what's happening. So I just wanted to call and let you know that I'm listening to the show. I'm sitting in a parking lot so I can actually have use of my cell phone for a little Starbucks for myself and the kids. And as I'm listening to the show, Cassie hands me my coffee. I clean the cup, and it now is all over me in the car in my lap.
Oh, wow.
That's where we're at.
Jeez.
Wow. So, yeah.
Yeah.
So I don't know. You just go straight from the coffee to the Jack Daniels, man. I don't know what to tell you.
Yeah, I mean, that's the next step. I mean, after we're done doing the group activity of churning butter to keep ourselves busy,
make sure you get one of those pictures of you in the stocks in the town square, okay?
Oh, my goodness gracious.
How are you handling all of this?
Not well. I mean, I'm not doing well. I mean, power is good, which is nice. I got no internet. I got no phone. I got no cable. So, I needless to say, I'm giving off a real creepy Kellen Winslow Jr. vibe right now in the parking lot. But, all things considering, I mean, I get to listen to you guys, so I guess that's good. And the Mets won.
There you go. Look at it glass half full, Rico. Your Mets got a win. All it took is for the power to be knocked out in all of Long Island.
Yeah, it's amazing what happens when you actually put players in their proper positions.
How about that?
Incredible.
It's unbelievable.
it's a revelation.
Right? J.D. Davis playing third, Guillermo playing second.
Yeah, it looked good, didn't it? Porcello actually pitched well. Things come together.
It all did look good. Have you gotten any indication on when anything's coming back? Any clue?
No, I got an email this morning. Well, not now I got it because my phone is working. We understand that you'd like your cable back, and we apologize for the inconvenience. We'll shoot you an email when we get it fixed, which is nice, which I don't get at home. So I'm going to just sit in the parking lot till that email comes again. Oh.
Wow.
Are you
Rico, what happened to your aisles yesterday, man?
What happened to the aisles? Where do we start? I think to your point, I mean, that's the close out of series. Canty, I mean, you've been in situations you've won championships. So you got to match the other team's desperation. The closeout game is always the hardest. I don't think they did that. I think the back-to-back wasn't necessarily in their benefit. And then undisciplined penalties. Too many men on the ice. Yeah, Varlamov taking that penalty. I mean, that was right out of the Rick DiPietro playbook. Handle the fuck out of the Capitals. But that's what happens. I mean, the Islanders' bread and butter is structure, discipline, great in the defensive zone, and they're going to beat you 5-on-5. As long as they don't, make mistakes like they did yesterday, and then all of a sudden Florida, who has a really good power play and a ton of talent, they capitalize on the power play. I mean, you can't afford to go 0-4 on your power play and then give up two power play goals and expect to win when you're limited offensively, to say the very least, for your owners.
Yeah. Yeah.
Do you have any concerns about game 4?
No. No, okay. I don't. No, get day off, recoup, regroup. Florida's going to come out hard. They coach well. They got a really good goalie. I mean, I think I said before the series, Bob was going to be Bobrovsky would be the wild card of the series. He had a really bad regular season, but he's won a couple of Vezinas, so he's capable of doing it. He's been good in the series. I expect them to bounce back, play a smarter brand of hockey, and I think they close it out tomorrow afternoon. They better.
Rico, how'd you like the Rico? I got to ask you this: how'd you like the 7-inning doubleheader yesterday for the Yankees?
It felt weird, man. I was watching both. You know, luckily I got no cable, but for some reason the DirecTV works. So I was watching both of the games, and it was funny because I'm watching the Mets game, and then I'm watching the Yankees game, and then I found myself screwed up because the one game was. You know, the Mets game was going on. I'm like, oh, this game is almost, the Yankee game is almost over. I mean, this is the 7-inning is just kind of weird for me, but I mean, whatever you got to do. It's 2020, man. Whatever it takes to get these games in, I'm fine with.
Are you eating your feelings?
Quite a bit. Yeah, I'm definitely eating my feelings.
Define that.
Yesterday, what did I have yesterday? I was a little upset yesterday. I went waffles. I went chocolate chip waffles. Followed up by, some banana bread. Carbicide. I've now moved to Carbicide. I'm going to carb myself to death.
Actually, you just reminded me, I have some banana bread in the refrigerator, so I might get at that after the show is over with.
Yeah, get your energy up before this week. You got a big week coming up.
Yeah, I do. Big week in Chicago coming up.
Big week. Things
someone would call it life-changing.
I would say your level of anxiety should be zero. I can't imagine anything but a yes coming.
Yeah. Me too. So we'll see. We shall see.
All right, boys, get back to it. I just wanted to call and check in. I love listening.
All right. Thanks, and don't be a stranger.
Yeah, be good.
See, you know what? Hearing from him, it just kind of put me at ease because now I know he's okay.
Yeah, he is okay. Yeah,
I haven't heard from him in the last couple of days. We see the text messages, but actually hearing his voice, it's like, all right, I know he feels a way about his Mets and about what's going on with the power being out and all of that stuff, but I know my boy is okay. He's going to be all right.
I thought he was legit.
We won't
mad
have
at me.
A Reese McGuire situation.
God, no.
Yeah.
Did you see the quote? That's a Blue Jays catcher who got caught in that same kind of unfortunate parking lot, not minding your own business kind of thing.
Yeah. Well, I mean, is it not minding your own business or is it minding your own business?
I guess it's a little of both.
Yeah, exactly. I'm just trying to figure that one out. How do we define that one?
This is a rough quote right here. I realized I made a mistake having my pants down doing what I was doing. Really? You realized after the fact that was a mistake?
I don't know how you... but I just don't understand how you come up with the notion that this is a good idea. Like, you know what? This is what I'm going to do today. This is going to be something that I try today.
Exactly. You just took us. Where is the thought process of saying, you know what? I got an hour to kill. Let me shoot over to Target. Let me hang out in the parking lot. And yeah. I mean,
That's a little strange. But you know what? Why even trying to rationalize something like that? It's ridiculous.
Well, it was in Florida, so.
Of course it was. Where else would it be?
Let's get into some Giants. Jordan Renan, who covers the Giants for ESPN New York, joins us. Jordan, who's playing corner this week? And I mean this week as in training camp.
There's definitely a good question. I mean, they need some proven bodies at the position, right? They have James Bradbury, who they signed, you know, big ticket free agent acquisition this offseason. And then behind him, they have a lot of young, unproven guys. I mean, and look, they were already going into this with unproven guys, including DeAndre Baker originally and Sam Beal. And now those two seem to be out of the equation. And you're left with, you know, Corey Ballantyne, who was a late-round pick last year. Grant Haley, Darnay Holmes, who was a rookie this year, who ideally they would like to play out of the slot nickel position. So they're going to have to find that cornerback, and I wouldn't be the least bit surprised. I know they were already looking. The idea was, okay, stick with the 90-man roster instead of the 80. A lot of teams will be cutting guys. They were going to be looking at guys, especially at cornerback. But then they had a pivot because they realized they found the rules too restrictive to go with the 90, so then they went to the 80. So they were already looking for cornerback beforehand. Now they're going to be looking even more, and I think I wouldn't be surprised even the slightest if they dipped into that veteran market. Logan Ryan, Rutgers guy, Christian Owen-Well, obviously one of the names that you should keep your eyes and ears on.
Absolutely. Jordan, before we even dive into the Giants roster, let's talk about how they're managing the protocols at the facility and how they're handling the players in terms of what they're doing away from the facility. I know that The Giants have offered players the option to stay at a hotel, but it's not mandated. But if they do, there's a curfew. Can you tell us more about the Giants' plans to keep their guys safe?
Yeah, look, and Joe Judge said it. You know, it's either a full bubble or you're not really doing a bubble. You don't really have that option in the NFL. That's not the rules do not permit them. And trust me, I think almost all, if not all, coaches would probably prefer to be able to have all the guys in the hotel, have them there, not going home, at least for the time being, during training camp. I mean, it's not like it's an unheard of thing, right? Because it's something they've done in the past. But the rules just do not permit it. So what Joe Judge is doing is he's asking them repeatedly, look, we have to be responsible. Every decision you make, you need to make responsible decisions. Because the reality is, your decisions don't just affect you. They're affecting everybody here. They're affecting your family. They're affecting everybody on the team, everybody they're around. And it could put a real crimp in their season, their training camp, their ability to be ready. So there's a lot of trust in the players right now. Now, the way the Giants are operating is everything is basically out of MetLife Stadium. So they're using the facilities there. They eat there. They're in like one of the club level, you know, that season ticket holders. That's where they eat. They have tables set up 6 feet apart where they're basically one guy sitting there staring 6 feet away from another guy. So at least they get to interact with each other, but they're not actually at the same table. They have multiple locker rooms there. The weight training is all moving. The only thing they use the Quest Diagnostics Training Center for, okay, which is basically across the parking lot, right? You know, I mean, you could easily walk back and forth, but they, you know, you bust them because they're sitting there in with their gear and stuff, is that they use the practice of the Quest Diagnostics Center for practice. But everything else is over at the stadium at this point. So they're kind of fortunate in a way that they have the resources of the stadium at their disposal and so close to them right there.
Jordan Renan with us. Jordan, just a kind of a technical thing. Reading about this morning, doesn't it surprise anybody else that the players were so adamant about not being locked up in a hotel, so to speak? I mean, for training camp at the very least, considering that this was the case, if the league was really going to try to do everything, I'm surprised that the players, I understand the freedom that they want with it, but wouldn't push a little bit harder, the league wouldn't, to try to get that done.
Yeah, I never have really understood this from the start, and I've talked to, you know, coaches, agents for players that are involved in this, and people within the organization, and nobody really seems to have a full good reason of why this isn't something that can be done, right? Because, Chris, how many training camps did you go to where you were basically in a bubble?
Yeah, every single one.
Aside from maybe going out at night when you were in Albany or whatever, you know, wherever you were.
Where is there to go out in Albany, Jordan?
Across the street tavern, I think.
You're going to get a lot of Albany calls in like an hour. No. But, I really the logic behind it, and nobody was really able to give me a solid answer aside from that. Look, guys don't want to be separated from their families at this time for an extended period. But, we're only talking about training camp. We're talking about a pretty small window. I mean, you're talking, especially with the way it's turned out, I mean, it's a month less, probably 3 or 4 weeks at this point. I mean, they're not even getting into pads for another couple of weeks. There's 14 days of real practices. Right now they're just doing strength and conditioning stuff and some individual drills. So I think there's a lot of people around the league that I've talked to that would have liked to have done it, but there's this, you know, negotiating players, and you know, you can only fight so many battles. So I just don't think this was one that anybody and the league in particular wanted to fight. I mean, what's the league worried about right now?
They just want to get the games on TV. They just want the regular season games to get on TV. So you're absolutely right. They're not going to fight.
What the product is. Yeah, it doesn't matter what the product is. It doesn't matter what it turns out to be. They just need to get that money this year, right? Get it done. Put it on TV. Make sure they collect that TV money. So that was, you know, they have to make a list of their priorities, and this wasn't one of them.
Jordan, you know what? You're the best in the business because you actually led me right into my next question. I was going to talk to you about the limited padded practices that they had in training camp. I mean, you're only talking about 14 padded days before you actually play a regular season game. Has Joe Judge or the coaching staff expressed any concern about that, getting guys ready, trying to avoid injuries to key guys before they start the regular season?
Absolutely. I mean, the number one thing that I heard from coaches, and even I spoke to a general manager for another team, and I said, here's when all the rules, guidelines came out. I said, what's your number one concern, right, with all these rules and guidelines? And it was getting an accurate evaluation of players, right? Basically, they have to figure out that they have the right guys for their team, for their system, not miss on any young rookies that might turn into significant players, and they have 2 weeks at most, right?
It's unbelievable.
to make an evaluation. Imagine a guy tweaks his hamstring and has to miss a few days during that time. I mean, how are you going to sit there and make a complete and accurate evaluation? That is their biggest concern right now. And I understand it. I fully understand it. And that's what they're going to be dealing with. And you know what? It's not out of the like the Victor Cruz, we've heard that before. The guy like Victor Cruz might slide under the radar this year. Mm-hmm. It's possible that there's a significant player who down the line, who's an undrafted rookie this year, who ends up as a Pro Bowler, who ends up getting cut out of camp by a team because, he really didn't have the full opportunity to show the coaches what they can do.
Jordan Renan with us. Jordan, I know that we talked about the loss of Nate Solder, and Giant fans are not fans of Nate Solder with everything we've seen, but I do think that there is a larger point that is being missed with him not being here, and that is there is the real potential of two rookies starting at the tackle spots right now. Is it a spot where the Giants feel like there's anybody on the outside that may be able to come in and help? Is that an area where they could still get someone that could potentially provide at least a little bit of veteran play?
I wouldn't be surprised if they added offensive line depth at some point. But in regards to what you consider veteran play, when we're talking about the tackle position, you have Andrew Thomas, you drafted number 4 overall, right? He's starting at left tackle. That's done, right? We know that at this point. Their investment in him, they're not going to mess around. He's going to start at left tackle. Now, they signed Cam Fleming, who's a guy who has already proven that he could at least fill in and play and start at the tackle position in the NFL, particularly the right side. I think between him and Nick Gates, who I know is competing at the center position, but the move from Solder, I think, makes it a little bit more likely you might see him at right tackle this year. So those, to me, are more likely, veteran options, if you want to call them that, because Gates is still a young guy. But those are the more likely veteran options than going out and finding a veteran tackle to play. Because let's be honest. Look, teams have hard enough time finding tackles in the first place. You're not going to really find a decent veteran tackle on the market anyway.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
So if anything, they might add veteran depth because they've gotten thin, on the offensive line in general. But in regards to starting, it's either going to be Cam Fleming, who's done it before with the Cowboys and the Patriots. He has that Joe Judge, Jason Garrett connection. Nick Gates, at least he has started a couple games last year at right tackle. Or then Matt Parrott, who's the guy who, is a third round pick this year. Considered a little raw, but I know the Giants are very, very high on him. He had the longest arms of anyone at the combine, like the length and athleticism at 300 and whatever he weighs, 20 pounds or whatever, and he doesn't look like he has an ounce of fat on him. I think that the Giants are really high on him as well.
Jordan, with the Giants being short in the secondary from a depth standpoint, a lot of attention is going to be paid to the pass rush. Outside of Kyler Fackrell and Marcus Golden, who are some of the names that Giants fans should be looking for in order to step up and add some more pass rush?
Yeah, I mean, look, this is make or break year for Lorenzo Carter. I mean, this is year 3. It's now or never for him. He's proven to be an okay player. Like, he's a good supplemental player so far. The Giants would like for him to develop into more. We'll see if that happens. I mean, maybe maybe the new scheme, the new coaching will benefit him. But and you know, Shane Zimenez. I mean, that's the other guy right now. I mean, he had a fairly promising rookie year. I mean, flashed a little bit, and he's going to get an opportunity here to show that he can rush the passer. I mean, that's his skill. You could tell that when you saw him on the practice field last year. He can really bend around the edge, and he has that ability. Now, he came from, I believe it was Old Dominion off the top of my head. You know, so you're coming from a smaller school. It was a big jump for him. So year two, there's a potential for significant strides from this guy. And, he came to the NFL from Old Dominion, proved that he at least can play at this level, and now has another year to get ready. I think this is a big year for him. So those two guys are the guys that I would really put my finger on. I mean, I'd be surprised if any of these seventh-round rookies are really consistent contributors. This is such a tough year for those guys to count on, like a Carter Coughlin from Minnesota, or Cam Brown, who was, I believe, the sixth-round pick from Penn State. To count on those guys to make a real impact in that area this year, to me, I mean, Chris, you tell me, you've been in these situations before where you see young guys come in, but based on the limitations these guys have, to expect them to make a contribution seems like a reach to me.
Yeah, I'm with you on that one, Jordan. I don't think there are enough reps for those guys to get up to speed and get ready for NFL competition in a regular season. I don't see it.
Yeah, their role is going to be, okay, we're going to get you up to speed to be a contributor at least in special teams at this point. And like, yes. You know, that in itself is going to be a challenge for these guys. So then add defensive responsibility at least for the first half of the season. I just don't see it very much.
Last one for me, Jordan, is Jordan Renaud covers the Giants for us. It honestly looks like and feels like this is a year where everybody's going to get a free pass. And I hate to put it that way, but you look at the schedule, you look at what's transpired with guys who are opting out, and what they've had to try to navigate through with everything that's gone on. It's bizarre for that to be the case, but am I reading it wrong?
Well, I wrote yesterday. I mean, I fully believe this. I mean, think about the challenges that Joe Judge is facing. He's a first-time head coach, not in the NFL, ever, anywhere, okay? He's 38 years old. He is taking over a team. He didn't have he had a virtual offseason. He's having 14 practice days. He's having some of his players opt out, right? There are three opt-outs so far, one being a guy who is probably going to be a starting tackle. He is a second-year quarterback. I mean, these are some serious obstacles for a head coach. I don't see how, barring them going like 2-12 or 3-13 and just showing, and Daniel Jones basically taking a step backwards, I don't see how Joe Judge just doesn't get a free pass, right? You know, like he made it very clear to them that this was a multi-year process anyway, okay? And you saw that in free agency. They didn't just go out and make splashes. They're not trying to win a Super Bowl this year. They're looking to build something, and it's going to take time and into the future. So for him, absolutely free pass. I just wonder, if this team struggles, the heat's going to fall on Dave Gettleman, right? It was going to be like that anyway. Now, does this buy him extra time? If this is year three years to build a roster in the NFL. If you put out another 4-12 product, and I think that's going to – I don't know if he's going to be able to get a pass if they're in that way. So maybe for Joe Judge, yes. For Daniel Jones, I think even, you know, people will be willing to be patient, even if there's some ups and downs again this year. Dave Gettleman's in year three of trying to turn around an organization. If they're still in that 4-12, 5-11 range, I'm not sure if that's – everything that's going on is enough to get – get a pass for that, for the third straight year of that for the Giants fans.
Jordan, since you brought up Daniel Jones, do we have any insight as to how he feels about Jason Garrett's offensive system?
Yeah, we're going to talk to him later today, probably in like less than an hour. The first time we've talked to him, early in the offseason program. He had been with Garrett a little bit, but, you know, he was fairly optimistic at that time about the offense. An offense being that is sort of they're catering to him, basically building around him and Saquon Barkley. So I think you're going to see, and now Daniel Jones, I know, worked on this a ton this offseason, of moving around the pocket, of throwing on the run. I think we're going to see a lot of that from Daniel Jones this season in Jason Garrett's offense. And it seems like it's something that he's taken to. And because, look, one of his best skills, and you don't look at him and think it immediately, is his ability to move. He moves very yep. well. And you know what? He can make some throws on the move. I mean, it wasn't on the run, but the throw he made to Darius Slayton in that his first start against Tampa Bay was almost like against his body a little bit. He was moving left, and I think he threw the ball probably like 40 yards downfield, and Slayton was tackled, I think, on like the two. Like that, mm-hmm. to me, like that sticks out to me. Like when you're talking about wow throws and plays like this guy can make, like that's one of his main skills, and I think we're going to see a lot of that. So Daniel Jones should be pretty happy with, I think, the fact that they're going to count on Saquon Barkley to carry the load and then have him do a lot of moving around and throwing on the move and play action and bootlegging kind of stuff. And I think that'll be pretty good for Daniel Jones and make life fairly a little bit easier for him. Because last year, I think that was one of the mistakes. Pat Shurmur almost had too much confidence in him. And he was a rookie in the NFL learning. And that made life a little difficult for him.
Great stuff, Jordan. We appreciate the insight, man. Thanks.
You got it, guys. Have a great show. Enjoy.
Yep. Jordan Renan covers the Giants for ESPN New York. 800-919-3776. 800-919-ESPN. Open lines. Good chance to get to some calls on the Giants. We'll get to some Jets as well here shortly. Right here on 98.7 ESPN. It's Carlin in for Rothenberg along with Chris Canty. Rick's internet still out. So many, many, many activities shot to hell for Rick at the moment, but we heard from him earlier. It honestly would be like living with the Amish. It really would be. Yeah. I don't know that I could survive it anymore. And I think that probably says more about me than it does about anything else.
Yeah, I would agree with that statement.
Yes.
DiPietro, Canty, and Rothenberg. Weekdays at 10 on 98.7 ESPN.